Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Welcome again to Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. It's a pleasure to wrap up our show with a special guest who leads an organization really dedicated to children and adults with disabilities. So Emma Kammeyer from Easter Seals Blake Foundation here in Tucson. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Very good. Well, let me give you a brief introduction. Emma leads an organization that's been providing services to children and adults with disabilities here in Southern Arizona since 1950. She's been with them, in fact, for the last 25 plus years. A native of Connecticut and two-time graduate of the University of Arizona with a BA in philosophy and a law degree, Emma practiced law for 3 years before joining the foundation in 1984. It's been under her committed leadership for this period of time that the foundation now supports 52 individual direct service programs. Therapeutic services for children are available at 16 sites in 4 counties, including 2 center-based child care facilities serving up to 150 children per site. Extensive early intervention services from birth to age 3, including family trainings, case management, and service coordination, as well as risk assessment, have been developed and deployed. The foundation's habilitation and vocational services for adults with disabilities are offered at SAGE, which is the Southern Arizona Group Enterprises. They've developed individual employment opportunities at 22 sites throughout our communities in Pima and Graham counties. Their community-supported living programs provide residential support and home settings now for over 90 adults with disabilities. So ever the nonprofit advocate, Emma is involved at the state level on boards and committees involving economic security, health and human services, foster care, and the United Way. And locally, she's engaged with the New Parents Network and the Angel Charity for Children. So again, thanks for all that you do.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let me give that thought. Did you ever dawn on you, move from the legal profession into nonprofit and find yourself in the same organization for this long period of time?
No, of course not. When you're going to school and you're not sure, I mean, obviously if you have a philosophy degree, you're kind of wandering around and just enjoying the academic world. And so the law school option appeared on the horizon, and I thought that would be terrific, and I really enjoyed it, and I actually really enjoyed practicing law, and it never occurred to me that this would be a direction in which I might travel. At some point in time, I met socially some folks who were on the board of what was then called the Cerebral Palsy Foundation, and they persuaded me that it would be an interesting challenge to take on this small, struggling nonprofit, and never saying no to a challenge, I said, sure, I'll try it. And I thought it would be a part-time thing and I could help them out for a while and continue practicing law, and pretty quickly found out that that wasn't going to work. And this was enough of a challenge that I thought, I think I'll try this for a while.
Wonderful. Well, tell us the history of the organization. And of course, to explain to our listeners, you know, may be familiar with Easter Seals, but the partnership with the Blake Foundation,
right,
too.
As you said, the agency was initially founded in 1950 by a small group of parents who had children with specifically cerebral palsy. And they were unable to get the services they really wanted for their children in any other venue. The public schools at that point in time were not required to provide much in the way of individually directed special needs services. And so they developed this lovely model of a preschool and a school that served kids up to about age 8. And for many years, until about 1970, it stayed this small environment with about 40 children. And it was a 5-day-a-week, 6-hour-a-day program with center-based therapists of all sorts. And it was a wonderful, rich program for their kids. Then in the 70s, the federal legislation changed, and it no longer was going to be acceptable to serve children in such a segregated environment. And, you know, that's valid. It's actually philosophically very sound thinking. And so we started to evolve away from that and make it a more included program. and not to have just very severely involved special needs children, because those children were now going to be phased into public school systems. So that's when the agency started doing some significant growth and expanding its reaches into the community. And it first grew into serving adults, also adults with pretty severe disabilities in center-based job training, pre-vocational training, and independent living skills programs, and that was through the state of Arizona Department of Economic Security, Division of Developmental Disabilities primarily. And that grew for a while, and then in the late 80s, we added habilitation programs for adults, which is essentially community-based individual and group residential services for folks that needed a lot of support in their daily living.
How do you measure growth in this situation? Is it, you know, not just the size of your budget and the footprint of facilities you might run, or the number of individuals that are benefiting from the services, but are there other areas of growth in terms of breadth of services that you then keep?
Yes. Well, those are all valid measurements, certainly. One of the ways that I've been fascinated to watch how this agency has grown is, as you said, the breadth of services. We have, when I look back at where it was when I started, and due to the amazing management team that I have, we have grown to something that is virtually unrecognizable, and that's been the great part of this job. This is why I'm still here. It's grown from serving children in a very specific array of services to where we are today, and probably will continue to grow, and that's just everything from early intervention, from family preservation, to actually Head Start and early Head Start programs, to working with behavioral health needs of infants and children, and it just keeps changing that way. So that's been the most satisfying part of it, and I think that would be the case for any business like this, that you keep finding new populations that you feel you've got the skill set to serve or want to take on the challenge of. And so,
in fact, you already have the facilities or the programs that maybe just with a slight modification you can touch more individuals.
Exactly.
Now, Emma, both you and I grew up or spent a lot of our years back on the East Coast in New England, and I'm sure your work does take you outside of Arizona, you know, around the nation and otherwise. How is this part of the country unique vis-a-vis perhaps other Easter Seals-based organizations you've interfaced with?
Well, the interesting part about the Easter Seals model, and we became an Easter Seals affiliate about 4 years ago, and so I've gotten to know many of the other directors of and CEOs of Easter Seals affiliates, and there are about 75 in the U.S. now. And the interesting thing about the model is that Easter Seals itself, the national organization, is not a service delivery organization of any sort. It doesn't mandate how we deliver services or what our mission is or how we fulfill that mission. Rather, what they do is they go around into areas where they feel that they need a presence and find agencies that meet that are already doing what they think is appropriate for their mission. And that's when we were approached about, I said, 4 or 5 years ago to join them, and we started doing investigation, and it's really an amazing organization, because all they do is join an existing agency and then provide an amazing array of resources and funding and, you know, fundraising capacities and actual fundraising.
So it's been a mechanism or a consortium you can join to adopt more contemporary best practices or get access of others.
Exactly. Yeah. They are a really terrific repository of all sorts of training for us, curriculum development. They help with advocacy on a national level, and they are pretty much very frequently at the cutting edge of human services as far as looking at what's going to be the next movement and the next area of focus in human services. And they've been a very good resource. And it's interesting to meet regularly with the directors of the other affiliates and actually find out how they're doing things and what's different about each state and how they've solved problems. And it's been a really great partnership.
Because I can imagine for you being in a senior leadership position as long as you've been with your current organization, that suddenly get this infusion of outside perspectives. Not that you didn't search it for it otherwise, because I can sense from what we said in your opening credentials about your involvement on a state level. But nonetheless, to be able to talk with individuals in the same space.
Exactly.
Particularly at a time like this when there's been such a constriction of some of the funding, access to funding, and shifts in the political arena too.
Yes, and that's one thing that's always been interesting to me since I've been talking with these folks and the other CEOs and management of the Easter Seals affiliates, is to see how differently many of them have arrived to similar positions in their fields, not the individuals, but the agencies. And so many of them, and I think this would be more of a challenge today than ever, so many of them have reached their size and scale by really amazing, intensive fundraising. So our agency is at about we're about a $28 million budget right now. There are agencies my size and larger who depend for their budgets about 50 to 60% fundraising. And I think that would be very, very fear-inducing right now to do that. But it has provided impetus for our agency to really look at that as a bigger piece of our whole presence in the community because, as you said, because of my background, I am much more comfortable with fixed funding sources, state and federal contracts primarily, and, all the different departments within those two entities. And that's been our comfort level. So our fundraising has traditionally been a pretty small component of our annual budget. And the Easter Seals affiliation has provided us with the leadership and the motivation to really enlarge that capacity. And I think that will serve us well, especially when the environment changes, the fiscal environment changes as it has recently. And we just always have to be anticipating cuts and be prepared for that. So that's when the fundraising cushion becomes very important.
I would say exactly. And in fact, you, in absence of keeping your eye on that eight ball, some of your traditional longstanding sources, your fixed funding sources, could go away in a moment's notice. And then you really get caught.
Very short notice sometimes.
So the idea of partnering now with another bigger agency umbrella that bring your resources, tell us about the evolution then of your staff over these years. We quite often here on the show, we have the Nonprofit Professionals Advisory Group join us and their executive search professionals and coaches in this nonprofit area, and seeing nonprofits more and more wanting to embrace or bring people with more commercial business background. But therein lies some subtle nuances and in bringing staff that comes with a different background. Have you gone through some of that changes as you've grown your own organization?
Not so much. We've had an interesting evolution of our agency in the management level. We have had an amazing consistency in that group. We've had, I think our least senior management team member is almost 20 years, or 15 years.
Is that right?
Say.
So longevity.
So
time.
What I've just been extremely fortunate about is having hired some very good people to lead the primary divisions of my agency and allowing them to be creative, to be innovative, to be successful in what they do. And I've just found that if you give people the support they need and allow them to innovate at their level and to be creative and problem solve and support them in their growth, that has been just a very successful way for us, for our agency at least, to prosper and succeed.
Well, and when you have a staff that's of that same mindset, your ability then to attract the huge volunteer base that I'm sure you rely upon for your programs, it's almost a natural fit. I mean, people want to be associated with organizations that are well-run.
Yep, I hope so.
That's right. Well, what are some of the challenges that are facing the human services field today in general?
There's a lot. Arizona probably is one of the less successful states right now as far as maintaining their human services networks. We, as all nonprofits do, are heavily dependent on state and federal funding. And that often becomes an area that is a very easy cut for legislators. So, of course, economics are always a major challenge. I think collaboration is another challenge for us that I think most agencies in the human service field have been very good at being creative about developing collaborative relationships and finding ways to work together to deliver services more effectively and to reach a broader range of people without a larger financial commitment. The regulatory environment is always a challenge for nonprofits, and it's reasonable that there is a regulatory environment that is pretty restrictive because we are serving often very vulnerable populations. Mm-hmm. But that just, it's something that is hard to work at. And it's, you know, usually your regulation, the staff you have who enforce or maintain, monitor your regulatory requirements, you know, that's just extra staff that isn't funded. So, you know, we're in constant battle with trying to make sure we do meet, are in compliance with all our regulations, but maintaining the staff level to work with do that is always a challenge. And advocacy is a large issue for all nonprofits now, that we've all had to learn to be advocates for ourselves, for our clients, for our families whom we serve, and to just be more outspoken about that, and teach our families and our consumers, our individuals, to help in that process, to advocate for themselves.
You know, with what we're seeing in the workforce of basically four generations in the workforce now, and as you look at the interfacing or observe the dynamics of the younger kids coming out of college or even at high school, vis-a-vis the advocacy involvement or public service and volunteerism in the older generations, anything strike you that provides an additional challenge or an uplifting cushion for what your effort in terms of this different generations of contributions?
I've actually been really impressed by, I obviously don't have a completely broad scope on this, but the folks that I've met, the kids that I've met today, the younger generation of workers, have a really sharp instinct for what's required, that grassroots community action is essential for achieving what's required. And they're creative, they're innovative, they are willing to do the work, and they know exactly, not exactly, but they know how to do the networking required to get the job done. So people coming into the field now know that it's a big part of the whole human services sector, that we don't just do good work, we have to actually learn how to communicate that to the legislatures, the voters, and to the public in general.
I think I also have heard tell that also now a lot more universities, colleges, community colleges have, you know, public administration degrees and programs and certificates that are helping fuel some of that skill set that can come walk into your type of field of choice.
Yes, I understand that too.
The other thing is there's a lot of discussion about the private sector and the public sector, yet this idea of the public-private complement and being much more integrated. Are you seeing that play out then to the benefit of your agency?
I hope so. You know, it comes down to, I think, what the society as a whole deems valuable and what we want to provide to our folks, our citizens who are in need of services, and to the families who are in need of assistance. And we see a lot more of that now in the last few years, since there's been economic downturns and there's been more people who need assistance in all different areas, not just folks with disabilities, certainly, because we serve a much broader scope than that, but families who are in crisis now because of financial reasons. And so there's a lot more CPS referrals, and that involves a lot more therapeutic and mental health treatment for children and family preservation efforts. And so all of that is something that the community at large really needs to be aware of. And obviously those services need to be funded. So it's the voters who need to decide, you know, our citizens need to decide that this is something our society values. We're going to consistently, you know, continue to value that, and we have to put our dollars there because it's most effective. It's proven many times that it's most effective for private delivery of human services as opposed to organized or state or federally delivered services. It just almost always comes out to be more beneficial to the individual and way more cost effective.
I think also more relevant, and there's that element of touch that really gets deep then into the infrastructure of your communities, of your families. It's closer on the ground.
Exactly. And you find much more innovation and more flexibility and more creative ways to reach people and to meet their needs when you have a private sector agency doing it. When you have public agencies doing it, they're frequently bogged down by their own internal regulations and their taxonomies and their ways of doing things. That's just what it is, and that's all they're allowed to do. If we are creative and we can still maintain our funding streams, then we have a lot more flexibility to reach out and find ways to help people.
Great. Very well said. Emma, how can our listeners help your foundation and the Easter Seals?
Well, as any nonprofit, we do have our fundraising arm, and we have three events that we do throughout the year. The next one coming up is a Cooking with the Stars dinner on November 7th, and go to our website and see that. And that's open to the public, and it's a terrific event held at Sakura Restaurant with a lot of local celebrities doing the cooking, and it's a lot of fun. And
again, that website is the blakefoundation.easterseals.com.
Correct. And we do have an election coming up in November, and it's a very important one for many issues. One that's very near and dear to our hearts right now is Proposition 302, which is a referendum to essentially sweep funding from something called First Things First into the general fund. First Things First was voted on in Arizona about 4 years ago, and the voters decided to add a 50-cent tax on each pack of cigarettes to specifically fund First Things First, which is a statewide initiative to ensure that children are ready for school. And as of now, the program's been very successful, and right now it's reaching one out of two children in Arizona under seven. So the program is growing. It's being the infrastructure set up. The services are being delivered. And we really need to keep the voters aware that they voted on this several years ago, and it needs to stay where it is.
And you're just getting up to steam, because it does take a few years to get the momentum.
Exactly.
In place.
And so the infrastructure has been developed. The services are now being delivered to a very large number of children across the state, and it's very important to keep First Things First funding intact, and we do hope
the fear being, of course, is if the money gets moved in the general fund, that we will never see it come back.
All those services will be cut immediately.
They'll get pushed for other needs at the state level.
Exactly.
So you've got a fundraising event coming up, and also folks to beware when you get the election in November about Proposition 302, and anything else then at this point? Obviously, you can go to your website. There's direct donation abilities there to support your efforts.
Exactly. We also have a thrift store, which is open for about a year now and has been really something we're very proud of. It's one of the nicest thrift stores I've ever seen, and that is open to the public, and it's called Reruns Thrift Shop, Vision of Easter Seals. You can also find that on our website. And go shop. Call them for donations. It's a great spot.
Very good. Well, Emma Kammeyer from the Blake Foundation and Easter Seals, thanks so much for joining us. We wish you well, and we'll keep you in our thoughts with these upcoming events coming in November.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.